60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, live on the road again, partying at Hawks on State Street. Thank you to Hawk, the proprietor here. Hawk Sullivan regaling us with stories.
He's got stories.
And we've been joined by a fine guest, good friend of the Devil's Advocates. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. And Jim, you have set a terrible precedent. You brought cannolis, man, and ever since, it's like there's an expectation.
There is. It's a good expectation, though, right? It's a good one, right?
It's a high expectation.
Right, high and good both. But we're here to celebrate, right? Because great news yesterday. Thrilled about the news about the expansion of broadcasting here in Wisconsin.
Oh, that
big
news. Did Trump get indicted?
No. It's not Merrick Garland Day quite yet.
Not yet.
But coming one of these days. But congratulations. This is neat. This is wonderful. Wisconsin, for the station, for all of us. So really important news, and just great to hear.
Well, as a broadcaster on the Civic Media Network, James Santel, morning cannolis. See what he does there?
See that tie in there?
The branding,
Saturday morning,
baby.
9 to 11 o'clock right here. Leads from the Shaw, the 540 AM studios in Waukesha. We played here on Devil Radio. Mm-hmm. But now with the doubling of the network, we've got Wisconsin Rapids, WFHR. I believe we're going to play you there, my friend.
Outstanding.
And also, in Wausau, though, we might have some conflict with some college football shows. We might have to tape delay you there. But as we go around the state, Jim, you are a part of this, and people hopefully are tuning in and getting your legal explanation, your legal expertise. But we appreciate you most when you come on the Devil's Advocates, because you make us look good.
Always a pleasure. Always
and you bring cannolis.
I bring cannolis, even from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They made the trip out here safe and sound, and so we're dividing those up among the entire group that's here at Hawks this afternoon.
No, we're not.
Okay, I didn't understand the rules.
We're selfishly keeping them for ourselves.
Okay.
These are not socialist cannolis, Jim.
Jim, let's talk about the actual, perhaps advancing news of the week in regards to... what's going on? The prosecutions, what we all anticipate will be the impending prosecution of the former president of the United States. And part of that is because we suspect he was the hub of the coup, although he certainly had some people like John Eastman, and there's lots of them, Jeffrey Clark and all sorts of others.
Invited to the White House to have lots of discussions about putting this conspiracy together, right? Right.
So, Jim, we know that there is apparently some focus and some subpoenas being executed, and people are giving testimony to the Department of Justice. How important do you think that advancement is, or are we all over here reading tea leaves that we have no idea? Because we're not on the inside. We're all just speculating.
Well, we're not on the inside, and so we are speculating. But now we're speculating based upon some good information. If we had had this conversation, and we did, about 2 months ago, and you asked me, you know, what's going on in Washington, I think we were all sort of scratching our heads and saying, what is Merrick Garland doing? Is there really something going on there? Is it there happening in a grand jury? And since that time, there have been all these indications that, yes, indeed, things have been happening. We know, for example, that this guy named Peter Navarro got a subpoena. Others, as you just said, are acknowledging that they're appearing. We've got document production requests. We've got the request from the Department of Justice for the transcripts of the interviews before the January 6th committee. Again, that's the kind of thing you would do if you've got a lot of people testifying. Many, many other things indicating this is a real investigation. We know Lisa Monaco many, many months now ago also said, hey, we're looking at that thing involving the false electors. And again, more recently.
And I got to slow you down here, Jim, because we didn't all used to work at the Department of Justice. Who's Lisa Monaco and why? Is that pertinent?
Sure. Lisa Monaco is the Deputy Attorney General. She's the number two at Maine Justice. You see her from time to time when they're announcing major prosecutions. She's right there next to Merrick Garland talking about all this kind of thing. And again, she not too long ago said that indeed, she was asked by a reporter, what's happening with all these 6-7 states out there? Are you doing anything? And she said, yes, we're taking a look at that. We've received that. We're pursuing an investigation. That's one of the tendrils that's out there. And so getting getting back to your question, tea leaves, yeah, I think we can read them fairly reliably now to indicate that the Department of Justice is taking this seriously. And I will go so far as to say these are the things we know in the public domain that we can talk about. Grand juries, by their very nature, private under Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. There's your civics and your federal rules for the day, the afternoon. Tell that to your family tonight. The answer is an awful lot more going on behind the scenes that we do not know about, we shouldn't know about, but we're finding an awful lot of confirmation that Merrick Garland is at least true to his word that they're looking at this. Whether he prosecutes and whether or not there is, in fact, Mike Crute day of importance here with Merrick Garland Day, that's another question, but it's ongoing, undeniably.
Do you think there's any fear of prosecuting the former president, Donald Trump, because of violence, of political accusations against the prosecutors? What would prevent, I mean, if the evidence is there, and I know that Dom keeps saying there's an open investigation in Manhattan. No, Alvin Bragg closed it effectively.
All but, right.
But his former prosecutor said there's enough there, I think, to prosecute and convict Donald Trump, Trump on crimes. Well, Jim, there was that surety, at least amongst the line prosecutor, but the boss didn't share that opinion.
Right.
How much of that, where do you think bump up against evidence, bumps up against timing and political reality?
You got to prosecute even if you lose, Jim. How important is it for prosecutors to say, we don't have 100%, it's only 96% or 98%?
Dom, I couldn't have said it
what
better.
What if it's only 67%?
Right?
Given the historical
1%.
Given the historical precedent, I mean, I think you still have to. Otherwise, it's all it does is encourage, Jim.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You got it right in the head. There are many times in my career, the career of any good prosecutor, if you had a prosecutor who tells you, you know what, I've tried cases for 20, 30, 40 years, and I've never lost, doubt that person, right? Doubt that person because they've never taken on the big, important cases. There are many times in any career as an assistant district attorney, a DA in Manhattan, a U.S. attorney in Milwaukee and Madison, other places where you say, you know what? The evidence is there beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm not entirely certain this is a dead bang winner. There never is such a thing as a perfect trial, but we're going ahead with it because it is right to do it. And I think to your point, this is one of those situations where, you know, you need to get the right jury, absolutely. You need to have all your ducks in order, as they say. All the evidence has got to be there. You got to identify a clear prosecution focus, but you do it because it is right to do it. And I'll repeat what we've said before on this wonderful radio station, that is the decision to prosecute people because of their political inclinations or because of politics, that is no more corrupted than the decision not to prosecute, likewise, because you're concerned about politics or, even worse, violence. It's not to say you're not aware of the fact that when you announce an indictment like this, you're not prepared for it. You do those things you need to do to prepare internally and maybe externally, but you got to do it because it's right to do it, and that's the point of what I think Merrick Garland's got to be wrestling with right now.
Jim, I know we're going to discuss many legal issues, but violence. Mm. And I don't want to forget to mark the anniversary, the 10th anniversary of the Sikh temple shooting. I believe it was just this week.
Right. And coming up August, this coming Friday is the 10th anniversary, right? Sunday, August 5th, 2012. Bright, sunny day just like this. A white supremacist, a fellow who was plainly looking at those people and said, they look different than I am. They are different from I am. I'm going to go in and kill some people. Lots of stories there about what prompted him to do it. Took the lives of 7 people, injured many others. It is one of the major horrific civil rights, human rights events in American history, being not in any way celebrated, but observed this coming, frankly, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Oak Creek, and frankly, around the country, around the world, people be looking to Wisconsin again, saying, how are you dealing with this horrific thing that happened? What do we learn from it? How do we go ahead from this? And again, knowing that we still live in an incredibly, incredibly violent nation.
We're not dealing
with it. Right. Nothing's gotten better.
Right, and nothing's gotten better. It's gotten worse.
That's one of the messages. You know, we're doing a program on Thursday night at the Oak Creek City Hall. One of the things we're going to chat about is just that. You know, lessons learned, lessons not learned. And what do we take away from the fact that we do have local populations, we've got national populations of people forever changed by gun violence, by this crazy focus, this cancer that we have in this nation, and we don't seem to be wrestling with it. President tried to do something again. Congress did a little bit recently. It's a very, very small baby step. We're still not doing background checks. We're still not doing lethal violence protective orders or ERPOs, risk protection orders, other things that we can do. We know what works. We can't get an assault weapon ban reinstated in this country. It worked for 10 years in the 1990s. We're still not doing that. We know it works, and we just don't have the ability to do it. What's that all about, right?
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us outside of Hawk's Bar on State Street in Madison. Jim, thank you for doing so. I want to get back briefly, if we can, Jim. Do you have any further thoughts on the violence? I mean, this is the issue.
I got lots of thoughts about violence, but I'll
but
set them aside.
As it pertains to
conversationally, no.
As it pertains to you know, justice coming out and right. doing a prosecution.
Right. Well, and again, I anticipate your question here. You know, in part, the other challenge that we have is the Supreme Court that what 3 or 4 weeks ago told us for the first time in our nation's history that you have a constitutional right under the Second Amendment to admittedly. Probably privately carry, but carry weapons on State Street in downtown Madison, in streets and villages of this nation. You can do that without getting any authorization from your local government. Nobody can ask you anymore why it is you need that gun. We can't do that anymore because the Supreme Court told us you've got a constitutional right. That married up with concerns about what may happen in the future, which we're just chatting about, that is a lethal cocktail, and that's a great concern, I think, that animates your question. I think as many, many people, including us right now, very concerned about what the future will bring here.
Jim Santel, fine friend of ours and former U.S. Attorney. Jim, how much do you think these lone wolves can be weaponized by the former president if a prosecutor, be it a state DA, an AG, whoever drops the charges, the indictments against Trump, Trump's going to try to activate some group of people. Do you
Again.
Think it will be to violent ends?
Right. You know, the question is a good one, and more broadly speaking, it does do that, right? We know that whether he intends it or not, and he does. We know that it has that impact. We know that just this past week, this fellow again named Guy Reffitt.
Reffitt, yes.
Reffitt, right? Sentenced by this U.S. District Judge in Washington, D.C. Gets 7 years, the longest sentence so far. This guy, I would offer to you, is a perfect answer to your question. This is a guy who, again, according to his children, his son, you know, testifies against him. His son and his daughter threatened by him. They're the ones who go forward to the FBI and say, listen, my dad's planning something, and then come back and say, he did something. He goes to trial. He gets prosecuted. He gets convicted. And now, again, he is saying things like, oh, yes, I want to make an apology. I was a little crazy. Everything went a little stupid. That's what he said back in 2020 and again more recently. That's the concern, right, that you've got people out there who may not have it all together to begin with, but nonetheless have access to weapons. He did have a weapon on the grounds of the Capitol, didn't go into the Capitol building, but he had a firearm there, and he comes forward. He plainly is intending violence, and he pursues that. He stands at the head of the police going, bringing the movement forward, and he is the kind of person who can, in fact, be weaponized under these circumstances. The guy Reffitt's out there, he is not alone. He is not alone, and that's the reason why we need to be so vigilant to address it, to have people like his son forward.
He was a recruiter for one of these nationalist groups down
right, there. I have regret right. every time right. I get caught.
right. So, right. I mean, the question is, does he engage them again? This we've already done this. Right. We've already been through this. We know it's possible. We know he did it. The question is, will he do it again? And I'm just going to say, yeah, absolutely, he will.
Why wouldn't he?
And why wouldn't they step up? Because what, until now, and with Reffitt, a seven-year sentence, now they did not give him the terrorist enhancer where they wanted 15.
Right. Sure.
And I did see the kids, Jim, say that, you know, if their dad's going for seven, which is deserved, Trump should be in jail for life.
That's the big takeaway, right? That's the big takeaway from the kids saying, you know what, who caused my father to do this? It was the former president.
He certainly encouraged him. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, stick around. We got more breaking news. Department of Defense officials apparently also have lost some phones and some texts and some, you know, just another day in the office. I want to talk about that and get your thoughts on what's going on with the Secret Service and the Department of Defense. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates live from Hawks Bar on State Street. We are having a party outside. Come down and join us. We'll be right back after this short break.
And make us all kids again.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show live from Hawks Bar and Grill, State Street in Madison, Wisconsin. We've got our friend James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around for at least one or two more segments. We do appreciate it, Jim. As mentioned, before we went to break, some breaking news out of CNN. Here's what they are reporting right now. The Defense Department wiped the phones of top departing DOD and Army officials at the end of the Trump administration, deleting any texts from key witnesses to events surrounding the January 6th attack on the Capitol, according to court filings. The acknowledgement that the phones from the Pentagon officials had been wiped was first revealed in a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit American Oversight brought against the Defense Department and the Army. Again, this is the same one that's doing it here in Wisconsin against Gableman. The watchdog group is seeking January 6th records from former Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller, former Chief of Staff Cash Patel, and former Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy, among other prominent Pentagon officials, having filed initial FOIA requests just a few days after the Capitol attack. Miller, Patel, and McCarthy have been all viewed as crucial witnesses for understanding government's response to the January 6th Capitol assault and Trump's reaction to the breach. All three were involved in the Defense Department's response to sending National Guard troops to the U.S. Capitol as the riot was unfolding. There is no suggestions that the officials themselves erase the records. There's more reporting, but we get the gist. Now, this is not the first time, obviously. Now we're dealing with this with the Secret Service as well. And I had a... Listen, Christopher Miller was installed after Trump lost the election as acting chief of the Pentagon. Why would you do something like that unless you had premeditation, a plan, a conspiracy to influence to do something? Jim, this is my take. Whether or not Chris Miller is involved in this or not, or the others at the, computer department at the Pentagon, it certainly does not look good and is a continuing terrible trend for government officials, Secret Service, and the Department and the Pentagon, Jim.
Absolutely, a terrible trend. You hinted at already. We know the Secret Service, obviously Homeland Security, all these folks now. You always have to remember that government is not just these entities. It's human beings, right? And I'd like to think that most civil servants, even appointed folks, are good and they have the interests of America at heart. That is not true of everyone. We know that certainly from the past. The reality here is we've got a growing sense that around the time of January 6th, when people said, oh my goodness, this is real, they had to know. They had to know in that moment. All of us did. As we watched it live on television, this was history, right? This was history. And they had to know, as government officials at the highest levels, that the things that they write about, the notes they take, the texts that they send, the emails that they send, conversations that they had, will be the subjects of review, not just by historians, but by people right away. So this notion that somehow they were wiped, whether accidentally, which is what some folks of the Secret Service say, which is incredible. Quite literally incredible.
Wiped with like a cloth?
Right. How does that work? And secondarily, it's got to be intentional. You plainly are. This is the Watergate lesson, right? The cover-up, arguably, maybe not worse, but the same as the crime itself. You're acknowledging, you're confessing guilt, right? You want to cover up something that you know is not going to go well for you. The other additional collateral point that I would make to all this is, how does this happen technologically? I will tell you that to this day, if you want to get every single email that I ever wrote as U.S. attorney, you can get them. They're still there. And technologically, whether it's Department of Justice, Secret Service, all these places, there are some very good people out there who can pull up all kinds of things. I suspect they're not wiped forever. And so not only do we have the cover-up, but one day we'll find out what these things do in fact say, and it will be worse for them, because that could be obstruction of justice at a minimum, as you say, a trend that is contrary to our sense of open government.
Well, I've been saying obstruction is a better charge than treason.
Right,
Jim, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Because, you know, obstruction, frankly, as bad as that is, I mean, treason is the big one, right? That's the big kahuna out there, and you say, you know, that's contrary to obstruction. I can prove. You know, in fact, there's a request for the information. I am doing something specifically intended to keep it from you as an investigative body, whether you're Congress, whether you're Department of Justice. That's obstruction of justice. It's all those things that Donald Trump did, all these other folks hiding things. It's all in the same category.
Jim, there's some breaking news over at the New York Times. I'll just read you the headlines as they break today. Officials involved in Donald Trump's plan to falsely claim he had won Arizona told lawyers they feared their actions could be seen as treason.
There you go. All right. Okay.
Okay. If my
so they went right to the top, right?
Yes, yeah. Treason. Like, if I do this, right. Am I committing treason?
Right.
Because that's a capital offense, Jim.
You know, right, as we learn from many people saying that sort of thing. And once again, like the news that you broke earlier today about the Gableman memorandum, these people write things. They do, in fact, reveal who they are, right? They know. As you said before about Gableman, these are not people who are completely unaware of what they're doing. They've got some modicum level of intelligence. They commit these things to paper, and now we find out about them, which, again, underscores the evil nature of what they're doing. And treason, obstruction, call it what you will, plainly, it is an attempt to undermine the fair and appropriate conduct of government in America. That alone should be enough for Americans to run in the opposite direction, not just politically, but also in terms of who we send to these positions of responsibility.
Jim, we're starting to see greater sentences leveled by the federal courts in the January 6th. Initially, it was 60 days, 90 days, house arrest. We talked about the 87-month sentence.
Right.
I see another conviction on a felony charge. Seems like, Jim, the more serious, more violent offenses are now starting to get wrapped up post-trial.
Right. Not surprisingly. Again, I don't want to say the easy things. There's no such thing as an easy prosecution. The simple ones can become very complicated. The complicated ones can resolve very, very simply, if you will. But that's right. That's exactly what happens. And part of it is, you know, you've got a Speedy Trial Act that requires that cases go to trial in appropriate term. That's what's happening now. You still have an awful lot of people out there who are yet to be charged, who are probably shaking under their beds today. And, you know, we also have this reporting. The Department of Justice, maybe not overwhelmed, but I got to believe, stretched very, very thinly to do all this. This is no small thing. And then when you move on to the Rudy Giulianis and the John Eastmans and, yes, the Donald Trumps of the world, those are huge prosecutions. You would normally assign 5, 10, 15 people alone to those top-level people. This is huge.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our good friend. Jim, you know every man at this table is thinking the same thing. When we crack it into those condolences.
Right now.
Let's take a little commercial break. We'll roll into the happier happy hour. We're partying at Hawks Bar and Grill. We're on the patio. Come on down and join us. It's a safe space to enjoy your friends, party with the Devil's Advocates, meet all the fine guests, people like James Santel. But there will not be cannolis for you. I am going to be quite selfish with the cannolis. Come back with us. Devil's Advocates, the happier happy hour. You on the deck, on the patio at Hawks.
Treason.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a party Tuesday. Dominic, we are on the patio, Hawk's Bar and Grill, right here on State Street. We got a fine guest, former U.S. attorney, our good friend James Santel, with us at the table. There are a few less cannolis. I dove into the cannolis.
And I've noticed, Mike, that you selected the non-chocolate covered, which would give my Aunt Carmela great pleasure to know that you went with the pure item, the pure bakery.
Yeah, come on.
Sweet. But right. Not too sweet.
Who puts chocolate on a cannoli, right, man? You know, it's just like putting a Hershey's syrup on tiramisu.
Exactly.
Mr.
Exactly.
Santel, right. Uncle Vito's rolling over in his grave, man.
I was troubled when I got them, I have to tell you. I was troubled by the chocolate-covered cannolis.
Tom's going to order ketchup and egg noodles later. Who's he kidding? Jim Santel, Dom, I will defer to you and your egg noodle ketchup eating self. I know you had a few more questions.
Yeah, Jim, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I know we talked quite a bit about the investigations and the J6, and of course a little bit about the Department of Justice. But obviously there's many investigations going on. I want to get your sense of where we stand on some of these. And perhaps the one I'm looking the most forward to being resolved is Fani Willis, right, down in Fulton County, Georgia, where Trump's looking for 11,780 votes.
Which still
is
looking. Still
one
looking.
More than he needs. So what's your sense on where that investigation is right now in the actual exposure? And, of course, subpoenas out to people like Senator Lindsey Graham, who's trying to fight them. Who do you think is ahead in the game here as it compares to, for instance, Merrick Garland at the Department of Justice?
Right. From the very start, we kind of thought that one, a more discreet prosecution unit. You could charge this again as the call you just described, Dom. I need these votes. Give them to me, Mr. Secretary of State. That in and of itself, I'm sure she's got that at the top of her list. That's probably count number one. What that is, that's solicitation to undermine our Georgia election. I'm sure it's in violation of Georgia state law. Again, not a federal prosecution. That kind of a focus on it. So she's got that one in place. All you need to do is play the tape on that one.
Right, no brainer, right? Low-hanging fruit.
That is kind of like the Steve Bannon trial. That you can do in a course of an afternoon almost. She plainly is going beyond that because, as you said, she's subpoenaing people like Lindsey Graham. She's subpoenaing other people. So she is doing something broader, and she is asking the question, okay, who else was a part of this conspiracy, either to prompt Donald Trump to do that or maybe even do other things to try to get the Georgia vote skewed in the wrong direction? And that obviously will take more time. Anytime you add a conspiracy on, you're going to be bringing in more people. My sense is, even so, her universe is necessarily smaller, and I don't mean that in a bad sense, but it doesn't have to deal with 2,000 people who storm the Capitol, and then all the Proud Boys, the 3%ers, and then the leaders of all that in Washington, D.C. You've got a discrete number of people who are focusing on one state for maybe a long period of time, but not over the top. And so my own sense is that one may well be concluded long before Merrick Garland is ready to go with something on his end out of the federal grand jury in D.C. We'll wait and see. But again, I think the big news is it is just the Lindsey Graham stuff. That is, she is looking either for testimony, could be a subject, could be a target. What did he do? What did he say? She's broadened the ambit beyond just Donald Trump and this conversation with the Secretary of State.
Lindsey Graham's defense, as he's trying to get this subpoena quashed, is that, hey, he's just doing his job. You know, he's just doing his job. Right, and this is part of the role of a senator and oversight, blah, 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 blah.
Right. He doesn't serve in Georgia.
What's your take of that defense, Jim?
Right. You know, so here's his exact statement. He says, the Constitution, he says, provides absolute protection against inquiry into Senator Graham's legislative acts. Well, there is a part of the Constitution that says, for things that you say on the floor of the Senate, we're not going to hold you responsible. Perhaps we should. Maybe another thing that James Madison would rethink if he had to rewrite the Constitution. But again, does it protect criminal behavior? Does it protect conspiracies to undermine the government, whether it's in Georgia or the United States of America? The answer is no. And so, again, we've talked about this. It's called the crime fraud exception. All these privileges, none of them is absolute, and the mere fact that he's a United States senator who's got some responsibilities in this area does not mean that he is immune, number one. We've talked, he's got to show up. You got a subpoena. That's a basic concept that unfortunately Steve Bannon now knows too well. You got to show up. You can raise privileges, and we can litigate those. Even the privileges are not going to prevent him from providing the testimony about what he did. It's not legislative. It is, if anything, it is probably criminal behavior that he'd be testifying about.
Jim Santel, let's talk about a little criminal election fraud happening a little closer to home. There's a voter advocacy, air quotes, character named Waite that apparently tried to get some ballots for the Republican Speaker of the Assembly and the Democratic Mayor of Racine and apparently like 10 other people. And then he went and confessed his criminality to the sheriff, a Trumpster from Racine County, I believe, Schmeling.
Right.
And Schmeling's response was not to seek to prosecute the guy who just confessed the
crime,
but to blame the elections commissioner and perhaps the portal at the My Vote Wisconsin, because damn it, somebody's got to pay for this man's criminality.
Right. And specifically told him, I'm not coming to arrest you. Go ahead.
Basically, hell no, I think is what
right,
he said.
Right? I'm effectively sanctioning what you did. I am the chief county law enforcement officer, a major. Now, they're all important in the state of Wisconsin, but that one in particular. And I'm basically going to give you a complete law enforcement pass on this. Now, under these circumstances, yeah, you normally go to the DA and get a complaint and maybe get a search warrant or those kinds of things. But the notion that that's his immediate response is very, very, not just... It's not surprising. It is shocking. And also goes to this other issue, which we've talked about at great length. If I commit a crime and then I come to you later on and I say, oh, I'm going to confess to it. I commit it. I use the example all the time, right? The bank robbery, right? I commit the bank robbery and then come back a few hours later and say, oh, wait. Here's your money back. I just wanted to see if, in fact, the FDIC was really serious about protecting your money. Turns out that maybe they were and all of things are forgiven here. It doesn't work that way. You've committed the crime. And again, not only is the sheriff not in a position to make those judgment calls, that's a DA who makes those judgment calls, but I would also say that to the extent that he's pontificating about this, he's just plain wrong. A crime was committed here. It may not be in at the same level as the, for example, the state electors or things we talked about in Washington, D.C., but the very fact that you decide to do this, it is in violation with intent, with knowledge, with purpose, which you've confessed to, it makes it a crime, and the DA should be looking at it. We will see what happens in that part of our state. Beyond that, the sheriff should not be out there saying those kinds of things, because again, deterrence, none whatsoever. What stops the next person from doing the same kind of thing? That's the long-term impact of all of these behaviors. Sends the bad messages to America. It's okay to do this. It's okay to lie. It's okay to undermine the structures of government, and we'll let you get away with it.
Jim, I'll take some small comfort in the fact that the Attorney General of the United States,
of the state of
Wisconsin, little distraction
right,
on the street. Right. I get distracted readily.
Right.
The Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, Josh Call,
yes,
has opened, or at least the Department of Justice has opened an investigation into the Waite getting the fake ballot character.
Right.
But I wonder to this moment, Jim, why is the Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin not investigating and perhaps prosecuting the false electors? I think they were in that building right there December 14th,
right,
committing a fraud and perhaps an insurrection, Jim.
Without in any way minimizing what we just chatted about this goofball, this jamoke, so to speak, who's doing this crazy stuff, and that is a crime there. The much more serious matter is exactly that one. Again, right up the street here at that beautiful building we call the Wisconsin State Capitol, we know that there was a fraudulent meeting, a parallel meeting at which people got together and said, you know what? We're going to put together some false documents. We're going to sign them as if we're true electors. We're going to send them off to Washington, D.C., to the archives, to Congress. And we're going to maintain that indeed, we're the true voice of Wisconsin. There is no doubt, from my perspective, again, I was not a state prosecutor, as a federal prosecutor, but there are prohibitions in the state and federal law against false statements, false representations, fraud against government. And I share your concern that unlike many other attorneys general in this nation, our attorney general is not pursuing that and has made just the opposite decision. I continue to be concerned about that, especially, again, with this recent news. We are pursuing the fellow in southeastern Wisconsin about this other matter, but we're not addressing the one right up the street that really had the potential impact to change the course. It did change the course of history, but could have been much more catastrophic.
Reminds me of the inaction of the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg.
Yeah, a little concerning about that as well. As we talk talk about these ongoing investigations in different areas and different parts of the country. Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, took over and basically said, "Nah, I don't think we can win." Right. A couple of prosecutors quit based on that. But Tish James, the New York State Attorney General, she's still pursuing her civil case.
Right.
And last we heard, Trump and the kids were supposed to come and testify, but then, you know, mom accidentally fell down the stairs and died of blunt, you know, forced trauma to her chest and
buried her out on the first tee.
So, I mean, I don't even go there, but they were excused from their testimony at that time.
Right, at that time.
I can't imagine. I mean, come on, the guy's, Trump's out traveling around the country, he's doing rallies. He certainly has time to get his ass back to New York under oath to testify, don't you think, Jim?
Absolutely. And Tish James is a bright and vigorous, I don't like the word aggressive, because that sentence tends to suggest to me that you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. She knows what's going on.
Diligent,
right, conscientious, right, focused, all those kinds of good words. And again, do judges, are they aware of the reality that's out there when they turn to the front or second or maybe the sixth page of the New York Times and see that Donald Trump is, frankly, going to be here in Wisconsin and Waukesha this Friday?
Friday, we're going to broadcast it live on the show.
And again, at the end of the month to try to, you know, his insurrection tour.
Absolutely. And they know that. And so one of the questions that judges can ask is, you know, counsel for Mr. Trump or the children, where is your client right now? What are they doing? Why is it that this, which is a judicial obligation, cannot be honored? And those kinds of things are. And I suspect we're going to be hearing more about that from the courts out there in New York very soon.
Our excellent guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He comes bearing cannolis and lots of knowledge. Jim, thank you so much for joining
us. Always a pleasure.
Here on the patio at Hawks Bar and Grill, you can all join us on the patio. This party's just getting started. The Summer of Love 2.0 Boosted Boogaloo. More the Happier Happy Hour, the Tuesday edition. Live at Hawks, we're partying on the patio.
The House of Representatives has passed on to the Senate, and the Senate's getting ready.
We got to do something.
To do something.
You know what we got to do?
Hopefully,
it's all good party.